Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is gaming analyst Ken Adams, who'll be talking about some of the problems of Macau casinos. We'll be talking to Ken in a little bit. Former co-host Michael Shackelford was going to come by tonight, and because he was interested in the Macau situation, turns out Mike is in the hospital. He has some kind of serious food poisoning. There was, apparently he has at least a 25% chance of this being fatal. So we definitely wish him the best. He can still get email, but obviously he can't come to the radio show. And I have a confession to make. I'm not real proud of this, but this is what happened. Shaq made some Super Bowl prop bets, and I was among a group of people who paid him some money. So I paid him $20,000, and as a share of the Super Bowl props. And due to that damn safety at the very end of the game, I ended up losing $2,400. So Shaq still owes me $17,600. So when he told me there was a 25% chance of this being fatal, I'm going, shit, is that 25% of my $17,600? Now, I'm not proud of my mind going that direction, and I really care about Mike, and he's a friend, and I really, his health is far more important than money, but that's where my mind went. Can't help it.
I think anybody's mind would have gone there, and we certainly hope he gets better quickly and that everything's okay. And actually, I noticed that you mentioned that you had an ownership interest in these betting, so you're not guilty of messenger betting, which only the state of Nevada could decide that that was something that they should pass laws about.
Definitely had an ownership interest. And good. Different subject. We received an email addressed to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. There was an Atlantic City blackjack player, I'll call him Jay, and he was playing and had a $100 bet early in a shoe in a high limit room. He was dealt 9-2 against a dealer ace. The dealer checked for blackjack, and since the dealer didn't have it, it was now Jay's turn to act. Jay doubled down, which is the appropriate play if with the casino's hit soft 17. Now Jay got a 10, giving him a 21, which is unbeatable. At this point, the dealer turns over his down card, surprisingly revealing a king. This means the dealer actually had a natural blackjack and somehow misread the situation through the viewer. The pit boss comes over and makes what I think was a correct decision. Jay loses his original bet, and the double down is a push. At this point, Jay goes ballistic. He makes a silly argument that since the dealer misread whether or not he had a blackjack, the dealer's not allowed to have a blackjack. Jay vows never to come back again. He leaves angrily and sends a letter to the president of the casino vowing that he'll never be in the doors again. Munch, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, this happens all the time, and the players always try to get a push out of the hand. And I think the more enlightened casinos just give it to them. You know, you want to keep your casinos are a service business. You want to keep your customers happy. So they push a hand. You know what I mean? You're going to win the money. They're going to lose whatever they came there to lose. You should just give them the benefit of the doubt and move on. Now, but that being said, certainly the casino has an argument for the right call, which, you know, I mean, the theoretically right call, which they made. You know, I mean, but if your players are going to get mad and argue about it, you know, it's not worth stopping the table. You know, you want to get hands per hour. So, you know, I think the guy took a shot. It didn't work. Maybe he stormed out his theater, you know, but I, as I understand, he actually did even better than he was asking for.
It did turn out that he, due to this letter to the president or the GM of the casino, he got a letter from the marketing director with some money and some extra money the following month, something like $600 all told for losing this $100 bet. And so... so your take is he was taking a shot and he was successful at it. He turned...
Yeah, not immediately successful, but in the long run successful. And I don't believe for a second that he never would have come back to gamble there, if even if he hadn't received anything in the mail. But, you know, this is actually quite a common advantage play to write to companies complaining about their product. You know, I one time wrote a nasty letter to Circuit City and they sent me a gift certificate for $100 or something. So,
okay. Yeah. I just thought the player was a whiner and, just I mean, there are, as a friend from New York once said, some people would complain if you hung them with a new rope. There, a lot of gamblers are whiners.
Yeah. True.
Without a doubt. And they whine. And, personally, that I don't like whiners a whole lot as to be around them, but they're
well,
in there.
You know, even as a player, I want the game moving. You know, me and the casino have the same objective there. You know, get more hands per hour. So, okay, you took your shot. It didn't work. Get on with it already.
All right. Now, one of the things Shaq was going to talk about tonight was the Academy Awards. Now, they're coming up. So when I talked to him today, I kind of asked what would he have said on the about betting on the Academy Awards. And so now I was driving and not taking notes, but this is the best that I can remember. He said Pinnacle.com offers the best odds for the player, although it is really very difficult for American players to get Pinnacle accounts these days. It used to be pretty easy, but then when that guy at the M sports book got busted for it, then they really cracked down on all the American accounts, and it's really tough to get one. But he said you can still access pinnacle.com and see what the odds are. He goes, if you can find other places where you can bet where the odds are similar, take them. He said betting all the favorites at Pinnacle for the Academy Awards gives you approximately a 10% advantage.
I would think any bet on Anne Hathaway to win Best Actress would be pretty much a lock.
Well, maybe. And like Daniel Day-Lewis is something like 14 to 1 to win Best Actor for his portrayal of
you have to lay 14 to win one.
You have to lay 14 to win one. And so it's hard to, according to Shaq, that's a good bet. It's that's kind of like no safety, where if it hits, you're doing really well. If it doesn't hit, you've lost a bundle. So or you could win a little or lose a lot, but you usually win a little. But according to Shaq, that's a good bet. We also, the Super Bowl was last Sunday. We did talk about the proposition bet of the name for the Scrabble spacing of the name. And it happened that Antoine Bolden won, and the Scrabble value of his last name was 9. We recommended taking under 9.5. So that was a winner if you actually did that. Whether the bet actually won or not is not really the key factor. It's whether or not you had the advantage. Next time we get Shaq on, I would like to discuss how he came to a good price as to under or over 9.5.
Because this is 2 years in a row that people have gotten beat with this no safety bet, and
yes,
it's particularly galling this year when they did it intentionally.
Yeah, they did it intentionally, probably intelligently. one of the interesting things about the no safety, so it was like there were, for those who didn't watch the game, it was something like 10 seconds left in the game, and Baltimore had a five-point lead, and they were on maybe their own five-yard line, and they had to kick the ball away. And so the question is, do they kick the ball, punt it, and then San Francisco would have 8 seconds or, you know, however many, how much time they had to score back, or do they take an intentional safety, which is kneeling down in the end zone?
Not kneeling, running around in the end zone.
Well, and then they kick it from the 20 rather than from the in the end zone, and it uses up some time. So they made the probably correct decision of taking the safety, although it cost me $3,000, so I'm not going to forgive them. But they probably made the right decision. And as one of the interesting things about it was all the Baltimore Raven players were holding like mad. Now, holding is an illegal play. But if you get caught, now they usually don't call penalties on the last play of the game or close to the end of the game. They just don't do it. But if they do it, a penalty of holding in the end zone is a safety. So they were trying to give a safety, but they were trying to delay it so that the clock would run down to 4 seconds or 5 seconds. They actually got it down to 3 before they kicked it. And so by the holding, they got it from 6 to 3. So if it had only been, if they hadn't held, then they probably would have had to take the safety at 6 seconds or 7 seconds, and that may have given the 49ers a chance for a Hail Mary or something. So
yeah,
that was curious. All right, so we have Ken Adams on the line. Let me tell you a little bit about Ken. He's a former casino owner, and he's written lots. He's a wordsmith. He writes a lot about casinos, although mainly for casino executives. Some of his work may be found on the website cdcgamingreports.com. CDC used to stand for Compton Dancer Consulting. When I ran a consulting business with Jeffrey Compton, Jeffrey and I are no longer in business together. We've parted friendly. And the residual of that is still called CDC Consulting, and Jeffrey runs that. But CDC Gaming Reports, Ken Adams has a regular column in there. Now, this is Ken's first visit to Gambling with Edge. My hope is it's not his last. Ken Adams, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you.
The particular article we want to talk about tonight, you wrote more than a month ago, and it's called Macau Just Might Be a House of Cards. There are two main factors you say that something might be rotten in Macau. So what would those two factors be?
Rotten is in Denmark. The uncertainty over the Chinese government's policy and the very narrow or small customer base on which they rely for about currently 69% of their income comes from the VIP high rollers.
And these VIP high rollers, though, they're normally brought in by syndicates or the triads or something like that. Is that the case?
Well, we don't know that. They are brought in. They are brought in. One of the companies that sponsors them is a publicly traded company. They're brought in by junket representatives to the casinos, but they're not brought to the casinos. They're brought to a particular VIP room run by an independent operator who operates that room, shares the revenues with the casino, but then he has his own network of junket representatives who float around, majority of them in China now, float around China and gather up would-be gamblers and bring them to Macau.
Now, some gamblers lose, obviously.
It does happen.
Yeah, it's happened to me once or twice, I think. So, if a gambler in Macau gets in over his head and he's here on one of the junkets, What happens?
Well, the main part of the business is perfectly legitimate, and what happens is he pays later that the junket representatives are supposedly very good at assessing whether or not he has any money, and he's capable of paying, and they don't bring people that they aren't certain can pay. And they rely, for the most part, on Chinese culture to collect. The loss of face, the friends finding out about it, exposure in any way, and they rely on friendship and an agreement between the operator and the gambler. So they rely on that, and pretty much it seems to work. There's the other one, the one you're asking about, is the less than straightforward ones are using traditional, we think, criminal or mob procedure to intimidate them in some way to paying. And the one that is in the article is about people that are kidnapped as soon as they leave the casino, and they're put in a room and said, you don't get to leave until you pay. Here's a phone, call somebody until you get some money. That was an anecdote that was told to me. It was not in that report, as I put in the article, but it was an anecdote that was told to me about that report. But subsequent articles in the Macau business newspaper reported on one like that, and then the statistics at the end of the year said there was like 23 cases of kidnapping for payment that had taken place.
23 that they know about, but
yes,
presumably
they knew about, yes.
Many people get kidnapped and they manage, and they don't want to lose face by announcing it. So,
well, in that case, they get it from somebody in their family, that somebody else comes up with the money.
You had a couple of articles today in the Adams Daily Report, or today and yesterday, about the junkets in Macau. Is something new happening right now?
Okay, so we seem to have lost Ken, so he's probably going to call back. So let's go on to a different subject, Munch, and hopefully Ken calls back.
Actually, I just want to mention that Ken has, in addition to that CDC consulting, he has a report called the Adams Daily Report, which is a really excellent email thing that comes out every day with articles. It's kind of like a clip service, articles about gambling all around the world, not just in the United States. So it's a really excellent report, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, the Adams Report is through CDC Publishing, so it is the same organization. Yeah. All right, so
That's 5 days a week.
Right. I was asking when you got cut off, wasn't there something about the junkets in Macau just today and in the Adams Report?
Yes, there's a series of articles, and the one you're referring to came from a secondary report from the Times of London on the 6th, reported that there was going to be a crackdown after the Chinese New Year. There was going to be a crackdown on junket operations. Then subsequently, and that was got a lot of press. It went all the way around the world, and every major news agency covered it.
And hit their stocks today, too.
Oh,
right?
Yes, big time. But then today, in the Macau papers, there were a number of debunkings that, oh, that's not true, there's nobody. The casino operators all said, well, we never heard of that. That's not. And several government officials said it wasn't true, but...
Are you a believer that where there's smoke, there's fire?
Well, no. You know, I don't know the answer to that. What I think is that you can't tell what they're going to do. And that's the whole problem.
That's the Chinese government. You can't tell what the Chinese government's going to do.
We don't know. So are they going to crack down, or aren't they going to crack down? And we don't know the answer to that, but it's that uncertainty that's what I referred to in the article. You don't know what their policy is. What is their long-term strategic policy for gambling in China? We don't have a clue. And any change in their policy is going to have a big impact on Macau. Are they going to allow this junket system to last? We don't know the answer to that. Let me read you what the Secretary for Economy and Finance, Francis Tam, had to say today about that, and see if you can tell me what he meant. He said, the government is stepping up its inspection of the gaming industry and imposing stricter examination on the backgrounds of the casino junkets in order to purify the industry. The junket system has been operating in Macau for many years, during which we have been optimizing the system with all kinds of adjustments and reinforcing our supervision of the system. Junket operators need to register with the authority and get a license before they can do business here, and we're planning to exercise stricter examination of the registration. The government is reviewing its current practice in this respect in order to have a closer check on the qualifications, particularly whether or not they have criminal records. Now, is that a crackdown or is that not a crackdown? What is that? What are they doing?
They seem to speak political mumble-jumbo as good in China as they do in this country.
Yeah, well, you know, but the difference is we can rely in Las Vegas. If the governor of Nevada mumbles, the regulation, you get out the book, you read the law, and you say, I am required to comply with these laws and these regulations in this way, and I have a system of internal controls that they've approved that says I am, in fact, doing that. What do they have in China?
Don't know.
They don't have the same structure. The government does not. They're not the same definite requirements that are dealt with in the same way. So nobody. They're uncertain. The gamblers oftentimes don't even use their name. Nobody even knows who they are. And they're cycling. They're buying the rolling chips, millions of dollars. Now,
what do you mean rolling chips?
They buy chips from the junket operator, not from the casino.
Okay.
The junket operator buys them from the casino, then sells them to the players or lends them to them. And then when they win, they get paid in, and they're valueless chips, or like roulette chips. They have no value. But when they win, they're paid in real money. Well, then the junket operator then gets them to buy with that real money to buy more rolling chips. So he just keeps them playing with this other stuff.
But he gives you extra. So you buy 100,000, maybe gives you 100,500.
Uh-huh. And they just keep turning. I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me, but they've been doing it for
It's
years,
kind of a comp system, except it's cash, you know.
Yeah. And they just keep rolling it over, and the junket operator gets a percentage of that rolling chip volume.
Well, before the American casinos started appearing in Macau, most of the casinos there were owned by Stanley Ho, who was, you know, Americans considered him a gangster.
With good reason.
Now, so a lot of these policies happened when all the casinos were owned by gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, you know, Wynn is there, and the Venetian is there.
But they have to compete.
And they have to compete. So would you guess this kidnapping and this other things that happens at the Americanized casinos as well, or just at the Chinese origin ones?
The junket operators have their own rooms. There are 20 casinos, and there are 200 of those VIP rooms.
And some of those rooms are in Wynn and...
But they're in all of them.
Yeah.
And that's who they are. That's the way all of them do that high roller business.
How much have they been hurt by Singapore? Has it made a dent in their... In Macau at all?
Well, you know, the growth slowed down. This year the growth slowed down. It was 20 and 30%.
Right, but they didn't actually have negative growth. They
No, they ended up the year, I don't know, 11, 12%, I think, for the year. They ended up at $38 billion for the year.
And that compares to Vegas is like $5 billion or something?
Yeah.
So this is 7 or 8 times as big as Vegas.
And what is Singapore right now?
Singapore, I think, is about 10.
So they've already outdone Vegas.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I don't have that number off the top of my head, but it's something like that. And it's if anything, that market has flattened out a lot, and Genting has seen some down months.
Now, I keep hearing that the Philippines is going to be huge, and that they're talking about this maybe even
March 16th is the first one of I think four in this Project Manila that probably is going to be about $10 billion or so total.
Why would the Philippines be so big? I don't really understand that. It's farther away from all the Chinese mm-hmm. gamblers.
Well, there's one more. Let's mention one more. There's one outside of Seoul, Korea, that is already begun part of the project, and that project is in the hundreds of billions of dollars.
For one casino complex?
It's going to be an entertainment complex. It's going to have parks and retail and theaters and whatever, plus four or five hotel casinos.
And when is
that opening?
It's 10 years maybe is the first phase of it, but they're working on it. It's not like the imaginary Euro Vegas that still talk. They've got shovels in the ground and they're working on part of the project, or the Vietnam thing that comes and goes so quickly. Mm. And the answer to the original question, now back to why Manila, one, that they have the Filipinos gamble, and Japanese and Vietnamese and all of Southeast Asia, and it may be more pleasant sometimes to visit the Philippines than it is there. But the other answer is that there's a very small group of people in China with the money. And again, back to that, my second premise on that, there are less than a million households in China with over $100,000 a year income. And
less than 100,000?
Yeah, I always thought that figure when they talk about Macau and they say, well, there's 1.6 billion Chinese. Yeah,
right.
But well over a billion of them are still completely impoverished.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. The per capita income is $4,000 a year. And there are about a million households that have over 100,000 in income, and then there's another 100 million households that have, and that's a lot of people, that have between 10,000 and 60,000 in income. I'm thinking they're not betting $1 million a hand.
Right.
But lots of people in China, and the income is doubling every couple of years. And so there's a middle class that's going out, and they want to get money out of China, and they want to buy luxury gifts, things that they can't buy in China. So there's lots of incentive for them to go to other places and gambling. And the Philippines did not include the casinos in their money laundering law that they've passed. There's lots of incentive for them to go and to find ways to launder their money so that they can do other things.
Can they take the money out of
China?
They're
limited, but they can take credit cards, apparently. That's the pawn shop scam. Is they go to a pawn shop and they buy a Rolex with a credit card, and then they sell it back for Hong Kong dollars or for some other currency.
I see.
At a discount, and then they have that hard cash, and then they do something with it, whatever they make a bet, whatever they're going to do, but they end up with some hard currency. And again, this is way over my head. That there's lots and lots of issues out there with moving money around in all of Asia that is complicated.
Yeah.
And Philippines casinos play into that part of it.
When I haven't been to Korea in a long time, but I played there a lot in the late 80s, and they had currency restrictions there. It was hard to get money out of Korea, even as an American. Mm-hmm. Is that still the case, or have they opened up?
I think so. They still think of all of this as not being Korean. This is not going to be for Koreans. This is
right.
Koreans aren't allowed. And this is still, the discussion now is still, this is a foreigner. It's what everybody's thinking. They look over there at that mainland and say, wait a minute, there are 1.6 billion people over there, and their income is doubling every year. let's get him over here and take some of that money.
Yeah.
You know, if we lived closer, we'd be putting up fast food Chinese restaurants and thinking of other things to do. We're just too far away.
Good. Okay, so tonight has mainly been about Macau, but in the CDCGamingReports.com, so anybody can go check those out, you post articles frequently. Is it weekly, or I'm not sure how often you do it, but there's dozens or more articles on various casino things, mostly United States, but as in Macau, sometimes overseas as well. So this makes you sort of an expert analyst on all things casinos, sort of. Is that fair?
You know, except that expertise usually, particularly in the gaming industry, we think of expertise as somebody who has some hands-on and done it in a direct way. And I am an observer. I sit around and read the news and compare articles and follow stories and write things related to the way it was reported in the press. So I just get it out of the press, and then I add to it what I think about it.
But Bob said in the introduction you owned a casino?
I'm a partner in a couple little casinos in Colorado.
Ah, I see.
Now,
Cripple Creek, if you want to go and gamble. We'd love to have your money.
Well, if you had higher limits, I might take you up on it.
But. Well, we only have slot machines.
Oh, you don't have one of the live?
No. We like to sleep at night.
Now, Malcolm Gladwell, I think what his book called Outliers, says to become an expert at anything, you got to invest 10,000 hours. Mm-hmm. Now, you've invested far more than that in reading and and analyzing and writing. And just as I know, the process of writing, you have to do a whole bunch of study behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So by that definition, you are a double expert or a triple expert or something like that.
Well, if you just go by the 10,000-hour thing, which actually came first out of Kenya, trying to understand why Kenyan runners always ran faster than everybody else in the world. And it came to this, that was the first one, that 5,000 miles was the first step up where they started to be world class, and 10,000 hours, they were world record holders. Mm. 10,000 miles. So it's been equated now to everything. But yes, I have considerably more probably than over
I'd
the
like
last.
To. You know, another big thing in the news today was that Chris Christie vetoed the online gambling bill in New Jersey, much to my dismay. But
did you read what he said?
Yeah. He seemed very positive about online gambling.
He just wants them to change the way it's written.
Yeah.
So did you read that, Ken? So what he said is, if it was limited to 10 years, he would sign it. So did you take that, Ken, to mean that if the legislator rewrites the bill to include a 10-year limit, that he would be happy to sign it? Is that how you read what he said?
Let me just one second. Let me click it up here, and I'm going to read the exact one that really is. Now is the time for our state to move forward, again leading the way for the nation by becoming one of the first states to permit internet gaming.
Now, is that just poker, or is that full casino games?
Now, they're not talking just poker. That just poker is a Nevada-based argument. That's not the argument that's nationally anyplace else.
So, what do you think except the chances?
You know, they had a internet gaming conference in Atlantic City, the early part of this week, I think, and. The AGA made their statement, well, you know, it needs to be only poker because poker is the only thing you could control and it'd be all of other men. The guy from New Jersey says, we have to have it. We want to do, you know, this is the salvation of our industry. So completely opposite.
Hmm. What do you think about internet gaming? Like, is it coming and how soon do you think we might see it?
Well, I don't think you can stop it. The logic of technology is really, really difficult, but I think it's going to come in a way that we're not going to expect. So here's an article, too, from today, is a forum to discuss internet gaming in Massachusetts. The Massachusetts Council on Compulsive Gambling will host a forum on internet gambling. State Treasurer Stephen Grossman said in December that he plans to ask the state legislature to eliminate existing barriers in state law that prevent the lottery from selling tickets and other games online. Other games are slot machines, guys. Don't ever get confused. And already the director in Ohio thinks he can do it. The director in Iowa said that very clearly. This is a state's rights issue. Get out of our face. I have the authority right now to put slot machines online.
They're not talking about blackjack.
Whatever he wants.
Yeah, if they can put slots, they can put table games.
Yeah, and that's their plan. And there are a number of lottery directors who are working towards this. They're testifying in Congress over the poker-only bill. They oppose it because for them, and many times they don't require their enabling legislation already gives them the authority to add VLTs. And if they have the authority to sell the tickets online, then they have the authority to put their games online, and they have the authority to go online. And we're all going to be standing around arguing about, well, I think it's good. In the meantime, they're going to be eating our lunch. And what I think is there's just a limited amount of money, and that people who can gamble online will. And every dollar that's spent online will not be spent in the casino. And it's really hard to service that. How much is how many billion is the city center on players that are playing online? That's almost $10 billion that somebody spent on a building in Las Vegas. That whole Las Vegas. How much money is the strip worth right now?
Yeah.
$100 billion? What's the number now? It's a big number. Who's going to service that when everybody's sitting at home and all across the country playing online? It doesn't mean they won't come to Las Vegas. Of course they'll come to Las Vegas. But they'll come with less money, guys. There's only so much money to go around, and when you're spending it in one place, you don't have it to spend in another.
So
my opinion.
Is that why in Nevada they're limiting it to poker? Because generally speaking, poker is not a high revenue game for Nevada.
But they're really shooting themselves in the foot. If you can only do it state by state, all the people in California, you know, if they can gamble online in California, but when they come to Nevada, I mean, I guess the Nevada citizens, it'll get them to come out of their homes.
Nevada,
the
governor has asked for a law to allow him to have compacts with other states where he can have gamblers from those states gambling Nevada. Nevada had hoped to co-opt the whole process, license all the major companies, get federal legislation that required them to already be licensed someplace, and Nevada would have had the beachhead. It's not working out. Harry made his best try, and it's not working. For one thing, there are too many other agendas, and it can't be controlled. And that's the part that I think everybody's missing, is you're not going to be able to control it. There's so many things with technology. If you just think about what's happened with the internet and the way it spreads, you can't stop it. And when you have a vested interest like the newspaper against the internet, what do? You lose. You start laying off employees. You can't compete. And it's not going to be as bad as that, and the people will still go to casinos. And, you know, it's not the end of the world, but it's not going to be easy. And the industry is going to change. And how long that's going to be, I have no idea.
Interesting.
Some of it's coming pretty fast.
We're talking to Ken Adams, gaming analyst. We started talking about Macau, and we have ranged broadly. It's, as you can tell, he is knowledgeable about a whole bunches of casino stuffs. It is both Munch's and my hope that we can twist your arm to come back and see us on a semi-regular basis. This was very informative, and we appreciate very much you taking the time to do it.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
You think we might be able to twist your arm a little bit?
Well, you know, I think so.
That's the right answer. Thank you very much, Ken. We'll be talking to you again. And you can read his things at cdcgamingreports.com. And you'll find a lot of interesting articles there. Thank you, Ken.
Thanks.
So, Munchkin, what did we learn tonight?
Well, we learned that internet gambling is about to explode, you know, which...
That was shocking news.
Well, I my fingers have been crossed for a long time, so, you know, mo better. I'm happy to hear about that big complex in Korea. I know there's a big casino opening in Philippines in May, and I'm actually thinking about making a trip down there this summer, so... you know, the more casinos they build, the more places we have a chance to earn money.
So your wife is Philippine. Will she go along as a translator?
Oh, yeah. I mean...
No, chance of you going without her.
No.
All right. Very good. So I thought that was interesting, and that the Chinese government is now maybe denying that they're having problems over there. But one thing I guess we didn't follow up on, but... A lot of these junkets are run by the triads, and the triads have been dormant for a while, but now with this Macau money, and it's $38 billion, it's 7 or 8 times as big as Las Vegas in terms of the money that goes through there, the triads have become very alive and healthy, which is probably not good news.
Also, people should realize that, you know, these rolling chips and some of the deals that are to be had there, it's very difficult for Caucasians to get these kind of deals. So it's very hard for advantage players to go to Asian countries and be able to take any money out. They're just very suspicious of Caucasians generally in the Asian countries.
As well they should be. All right. South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. Double Points in February are on Valentine's Day, which is a week from today, and President's Day, which is 4 days later. Since the days are so close, I suspect there will be several out-of-town players who will be making an extended stay and play both promotions. For the stakes that they have... Like Quick Quads, the game I play, $60 per hand at a 0.25% advantage on double point days. You can get probably 30,000 an hour through the machines. So you do the math. It's a nice play. There will be people coming in just for that. Now, we're currently in our semester of free video poker classes at the South Point. The first one was last Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. The first class will be beginning double bonus, and the second class will be beginning double-double bonus. Now, these games in and of itself, they do not have the 100% versions at the South Point, but the games they have are approximately 99%, which is the lowest games I've ever taught. But the reason I'm teaching it is, first of all, the strategy for the 99% game and the 100% game are very, very close, and we'll tell you what the differences are in the class. And also, the following 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about Quick Quads on double-double bonus and Ultimate X on double-double bonus. And as it happens, the strategy for Ultimate X double-double bonus is very close to double bonus regular strategy. So the players who know these strategies will have a heads up on the lucrative games. Ultimate X is one of the most lucrative games at the South Point, one of the most lucrative games at the Palms. So every game has its own strategy. At the Palms, the Friday and Saturday night drawing in February is called the $80,000 Golden Statue. It has an Oscar theme, Academy Awards. So the time for the drawings is 8 o'clock every Friday and Saturday. You earn tickets all week by your play. 10 winners. The top 5 are equal. They choose between 7 packages. And one of the packages has $3,000 and the lowest has $250 and some are left over. And the next 2 winners get invited to a special Oscar party at the Brendan Theaters at the Palms. And the last the last three people get $250. So I guess I said that wrong. If you get one of the first five, the lowest prize you can get is $500. And the $250 is for the 8th, 9th, and 10th. The double drawing tickets is Sundays and Thursdays. This is a change. It used to be Sundays and Tuesdays. Now it's Sundays and Thursdays. I was there today and playing a lot. It was very crowded. It is also a Thursdays is their Sterling Advantage Day, which means seniors. So the Sterling Advantage is what they call us, sexy seniors. And so now with double drawing tickets as well, it's very, very crowded. All right. Videopoker.com, they'll have their monthly drawing beginning in the 24th of February, going to the end of the month. Actually, it's a little bit early. It's just 8 days, so I didn't check the actual date, so it sounds like it's the 21st. February is shorter. Next week, our guest is Max Rubin. Max Rubin is the host of the Blackjack Ball. On last week's show, which Munchkin and I talked a lot about the Blackjack Ball for that happened a couple weeks ago. In next week, we're going to be talking to Max about the first 16 years of the Blackjack Ball and some of the fun stuff that's happening. One of our co-hosts will be Arnold Snyder. You know him as a blackjack guru. He's a very interesting guy. Now, Munch, you may or may not be here. What's the story with you?
My wife hasn't told me yet whether my 20th wedding anniversary is next Wednesday, actually. But Thursday is Valentine's Day, and so usually, you know, she gets two nights out of it. But I don't know. There's a chance I may call in. I don't know. So, but it sounds like you're in good hands with Arnold and Max here. So,
oh, Arnold and Max are going to be fun. So it's going to be a fun evening. Max is a wit and raconteur. He's a lot of really clever lines. He has a really interesting way of saying things, and he's fun. And Arnold is interesting, too. So we will enjoy yours with or without you, Munchkin. My preference is with you, but with or without, it's going to be a good show. In 2 weeks, we're going to be talking to Peter Liston. He's a man who's made more than $1 million playing progressive slots. So he's written a book called Million Dollar Slots, which we'll be talking about. And he was on A Gambling with an Edge once before, as an interview with by Frank Nealon. I was out of town that night, and that the connection was not real good. It was on a cell phone, but he will be back, and looking forward to that. Now, last week we were supposed to have Rich Strafella, who's vice president of casino operations at the Palms. There was a mix-up, my fault, and so we rescheduled. Then when Mr. Strafella saw the questions that we wanted him to ask her on the air, he decided he didn't want to come on the air.
I was being nice, really.
I thought I was being nice, too, but apparently the questions were a little bit too pointed. I'm sorry that he felt that way, and we're trying to find a way to get him on, but right now it's not looking probable. So on richardmunchkin.com, you recently wrote an article about your most memorable hands. So there were two hands in there. One was, I want to hear about the hand that happened with you as a dealer. So what happened there?
Yeah, you know, when people get together, they often talk about these kind of things, you know. But yeah, my most memorable hand was not one as a player, it was as a dealer. 30-plus years ago, I was a dealer, and I was talking to a girl on third base and dealing. And
pretty girl?
Very pretty girl. And as I was wont to do, I, you know, would always strike up a conversation that was much more interesting than dealing blackjack. And so I'm talking to her, and I whip out the hand, and she's on third base. The guy on first base doubles his bet. And because I'm paying attention to her, I split his 7 and a 4, and I hit the 10, the 7 with a 10, and I hit the 4 with a 4 and a 10, and I'm working my way around the table talking to her. And I remember thinking, like, he shouldn't split that. I have a 10 up, you know? And
He should double down on 11, which is what he was trying to do.
What he was trying to do, yeah. Anyway, I had a 3 in the hole and, you know, turn it over and hit it with an 8, and I'm going around taking everybody's money, and I get to first base, and the guy's pointing at his cards going, And, you know, I realize what I've done, so I turn around and I call the boss and I go, "Don, this guy split a 7 and a 4. You're not allowed to do that."
like it's his fault.
Yeah, like it's his fault.
Not the dealer's fault.
And the guy's still like stuttering, not knowing what to do. And the pit boss just shook his head. You know, he just said, "Give everybody a push." You know, and again, going back to the guy in Atlantic City, you know, there was a boss who understood. I made 21. You know, I mean, yeah, the cards would have been different, but anyway, he was like, "Give everybody a push." Everybody was happy with that. You know, so. And then, you know, he just gave me that look like, you know, "You're a moron, kid," you know. And he said to me, "I've been in this business a lot of years. I never saw anybody do that before."
Probably hasn't happened again.
No. It was, although I did make quite a number of bonehead mistakes when I was talking to some girl on the table. So.
Yeah, amazing what guys do when they're trying to get laid. All right. Now, if you're interested in buying a town, the town of Searchlight, Nevada is now for sale.
Right.
So are you thinking about buying a town?
A whole town? What? And the birthplace of Harry Reid, I guess.
Well, that's his hometown. I don't know if it's his birthplace, but it's definitely his he lives there.
Yeah. But it comes with a casino and 90-some slot machines. And, you know, sounds like a good thing if you could get a gaming license. I mean, I'd love to own a town and a casino.
Now, the only thing I remember about Searchlight is it's if you're driving from Las Vegas to Laughlin, you go through Searchlight. Searchlight, it's at the top of a hill that's between Vegas and Laughlin. And at either edge of the town has a population of 1,000, and you don't know where they put them because it seems really small. But at either edge of the town, there would be this police car with a dummy in the driver's seat with a police hat on. So presumably that was their way to get you to slow down. Because you say, "Oh my God, there's a cop car. I got to slow down because you're driving 80 miles an hour down this Highway 93. And then you get to this 25 mile an hour speed trap with a cop car sitting there. So everybody slows down. And it was always a dummy. And you knew it was a dummy. At least you knew it was a dummy last time. You don't know it's a dummy this time.
Yeah, you still have to slow down.
You still have to slow down. So it was, although an empty police car isn't cheap to leave there, it might be cheaper than hiring
Barney Fife.
Somebody to actually clock people.
Yeah. We stopped at that casino once on a trip down to Laughlin. But,
yeah, to play or to eat? Or
well, to eat. We were going to play just to do it. But I think they had one blackjack table, and it was closed. So, and I think the maximum bet was $25, but it was a long time ago. So.
Yeah, I never checked out the blackjack. I checked out all of the video poker machines, and it was definitely worthy of me getting back into my car and moving on to Laughlin. It was not.
We should also mention that Bill's closed this week, which the Barbary Coast, which was always the best place to park if you were going to the casinos there on the center strip. So
yes, I would go to Bally's. I would park at Bill's,
yep,
or Barbary Coast. And so it's going to be become part of the Flamingo? Is that what it's going to?
I don't know what they're doing to it. Yeah.
All right, we got 10 seconds to go. Everybody go out and hit lots of royal flushes. Thank you very much for being here tonight.
Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.